section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
86 Productions.
The best podcast providing the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. On today's show, we have Aaron, Roger, and Doug to join Andrew as we discuss this month's view from the turnbuckle. So, the biggest news so far, Aaron, is Braun is out for 6 months. But do you think that it's kind of a work now that he's going to be back sooner?
I do. I think that the 6 month is a, they're trying to kayfabe it. So that way, when he comes back in, like 4 to 6 weeks, that he'll be able to say, oh, he's a monster among men. He, blew through his rehab and was able to come back to take on, Brock Lesnar for the title. Because I think we're all expecting now that SummerSlam's main event is going to be Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman, which, as I said in the last show, that's actually a event I want to see. I'm curious how Braun is, because of the way he's been booked very well. I'm curious what WWE is going to do with him against a monster like Brock Lesnar. Is Brock actually going to sell for him, or is he going to dominate him?
Braun will be another victim, as Paul Heyman said it this Monday night, for the Beast Incarnate. But yes, this is a work. This is just to give him that extra. I mean, John Cena came back from injuries early, so let's make it sound like Braun's going to come back from injury early. But then you can also still have the excuse of why Braun loses is because he wasn't fully healthy yet. So you can still set up a possible rematch later.
Yeah, no, I think the 6 month thing is a total work. I think he is slotted for the main event of SummerSlam. While I think the injury is unfortunate, I don't necessarily know that it's all that bad of a thing because he left kind of at the right time. You know, they say in show business, leave him wanting more. He left right at the time after beating Roman where I'm going to be excited to see him when he comes back. If he just shows up out of nowhere and flips Roman Reigns off of a truck, off of the stage, I'm going to love it. I'd love it anyway. So it's good for him. I think actually him and Lesnar are going to be interesting. I hope that he has a good showing in that main event and maybe it causes them to change plans and give that super push that Roman seems to get to Braun and, save us Strowman.
And the other big news is that the women's tournament is going to be it's going to be on July 13th and 14th, and it's going to be known as the Mae Young Classic. Are you excited about this, Roger?
I'm excited about the tournament. I'm not excited about the name. I think that if you wanted to name it after somebody legendary, you probably shouldn't have done it after someone who you dragged through the mud pretty much throughout the entire Attitude Era and had her ruin her entire legacy with some really sophomoric skits and giving birth to a hand. I'm not exactly sure that name is prestigious in WWE, even if she does have a legendary career. But ignoring their recent trend of stupid names, tournament should be good. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the tournament, the women from around the world. And let's hope that we get enough women in there to build up both divisions, because right now those divisions are thin. So they need an influx of talent and they need it soon.
I'm excited for this too, because the fact that the tournaments that they've been putting on, whether you do the Cruiserweight Classic or even the UK Championship, have been really, really good. So seeing the women wrestling this time, very interested to see how it's going to be, how they turn out and where they end up going. Calling it the Mae Young Classic. Sure. Yeah. Like Roger said, she's a legend. She's a Hall of Famer, but they did kind of run her name through the mud through the Attitude area. So I'm kind of curious what the trophy's going to look like. I was going to make the hand joke there, but Roger mentioned it. Yeah, it's just going to be one giant hand. Or whether they breed out the hand to pass it out, because like they had for the tag team tournament for the they had the Rhodes boys there to hand it out. So why not hand out the trophy to bring it back,
Sponsored by Hamburger Helper with the mascot of the hand. It's going to come out and talk, and that's going to be the trophy, I think.
And that's it for our show this week, guys. Thanks for listening.
And I agree with both your points, so don't want to belabor that too much. I do, though, want to jump straight into the WWE title with what had happened for this past month. We had Backlash. For the WWE pay-per-view, which was a SmackDown exclusive. And the biggest news, of course, is Jinder Mahal wins the WWE title. And there's a lot that we can talk about this. So, Andy, why don't you go ahead and lead us off in kind of your thoughts and a little bit about what happened, what transpired that Sunday.
As much as I want to start this off, I'd rather hear what Roger has to say.
As a general rule, I think reactionary statements oftentimes are obnoxious and silly and without merit. Every WrestleMania that we dislike can't be the worst WrestleMania of all time. Every main event that we dislike with Roman isn't the worst WrestleMania main event of all time. However, of the 50 men who have ever held the WWE Championship, Jinder Mahal is by far the worst to ever lay claim to this championship. This is one of the dumbest decisions I've ever heard of in my life. He was a jobber on Raw. You had him come over and beat Randy Orton, a 13-time world heavyweight champion who kicked out of the Sister Abigail and basically killed any momentum that Bray Wyatt had. He lost to one finisher, not to chair shots, not to a low blow and a finisher, one singular Cobra Clutch slam that Billy Gunn couldn't win the Intercontinental Championship with 20 years ago. Jinder Mahal has done nothing special. He hasn't cut a great promo. He hasn't wrestled a great match. I couldn't tell you a single move of his that I even like. And now you're going to give this guy the premier championship, a championship that John Cena and AJ Styles put on a classic for at the Royal Rumble. This screams of, you know, and I've seen people online talking about, oh, yes, you have somebody who's hated now winning the championship and Vince loved it. It's like, you know what? There's a difference between boo, I want to see this guy get beat, and this is so bad, I'm going to turn the channel. Well, Jinder Mahal is going to make me turn the channel. A meme should not be your heavyweight champion. And that's exactly what SmackDown has, is a meme for a heavyweight champion. And it is a joke.
A lot of good points by Roger there. I don't understand. Well, I understand why they put the title on him. It's a business move, not a wrestling move. And I don't agree with that. Your number one audience is the North American audience. Your number two audience is the UK audience. Your number three is the Indian audience. And I understand you want to promote it. You want to acknowledge it. You're opening a new, like a performance center there for India. But you're not touring there until September. So does that mean we might see a long title reign by Jinder? Hopefully not. Bringing back, I mean, the meme that should be brought back is hashtag cancel the network. At least for SmackDown purposes, this was absolutely like, I could not believe it. I had to step away from this match to handle some other business. And then when I came back and I saw him with the title, I was like, oh, they're going to go with the arc that he stole the title again. And then they announced him as, this is your new champion. And it's like, and I'm done. I turned it off. It was, I could not believe it. It took me a while to even try to rewatch it just to see what happened. Because it wasn't even like the Singh brothers interfered to a point to damage Randy. All they did was distract him. And that is not enough for me for Jinder Mahal winning. I understand WWE likes to troll their audiences too, but one of the things I was talking to Andy before the show is they had a horrible time selling out a Chicago pay-per-view. A Chicago pay-per-view. They had 9,500 tickets sold before they even announced one match. The ending tickets sold was 9,800. They only sold 300 more tickets after they announced this match. That is horrible. That should flat out tell you he does not deserve to be there. And I'm so glad that when we had the option of either going to Backlash or even NXT, we selected NXT. I am so happy I did not go to this pay-per-view.
And the other problem I have with him actually being the champion, and they're pushing the fact that, oh, they're touring in September. He's Canadian. No one's brought. That's the thing. He's Canadian. He's not even Indian.
That's his nationality. His ethnicity is Indian. He's of Indian descent. So,
right.
You know, he's the first generation born in Canada. But I do understand what your point is. I have a slightly different view than Doug and Roger, just a little bit. But I do want to preface it with this. Starting in 2017, Jinder Mahal so far has defeated Big Cass in a handicap match. His next win came in a 4-on-4 match, which included Braun Strowman on his team, taking out Big E, Big Cass, Enzo, Kofi. Next one was against Sin Cara. After that, he lost over and over again to Big Cass and Enzo with when he was teaming with Rusev. Obviously, he was the one eating the pin, too. His next win was against Curtis Axel. After that, Curtis Axel. After that, Curtis Axel. After that, it was a six-pack challenge. What does that tell you?
That tells you that Raw is better than SmackDown, according to WWE.
Right. I mean, but that's the thing. He was beating Curtis Axel. That's all the only person he was really beating until the six-pack challenge. And then, obviously, then he goes over Sami Zayn, AJ Styles, and Randy Orton. I actually don't have an issue from a business decision to have Jinder Mahal win the title. The issue I have is the way that you go about it, because this is 2017. If you know that you are going to India, because this was announced, you know, over a year ago, because Del Rio was doing promotional work for it. So if that's the case, you know you're going to India. And so you know that, hey, we have one Indian on our roster. Let's try to protect him a little bit. And all those losses that he has had so far in 2017, he didn't need those. Those are ones where maybe you do 50-50 booking. So, you know, maybe he gets win over Enzo. Maybe he does a single match with Enzo. And you try to build him up a little bit. Maybe he's contending for the U.S. and the IC title. If you do something like that, I would be more okay with it. But the issue I have is the fact that the booking does not make sense. You could not just have all of a sudden Zack Ryder win the WWE title and then be like, what? You know, it can happen. And I mean, in Zack Ryder winning it over Jinder, I would be more okay with. But Jinder, and it's not because he's a heel or, you know, because he's Indian. It's the fact that they booked him so poorly. This is a man who lost a singles match to El Torito. So that is the biggest issue I have with this. But at the same time, the business side of it makes total sense, because over in India, they believe that it is, you know, partially real. And this is going to give them a really big boost in ticket sales, because if you're announcing right now that the WWE champion Jinder Mahal is going to be at, you know, the September showings, he doesn't even have to be the champion at the time. This is going to increase ticket sales because he's currently champion. So that's one of the things I think that they're trying to go for. I don't know how long he's going to hold the title for. My guess is he might hold it until September when they are touring. If that's the case, though, I probably would have done this a little bit differently. I probably would have had him, you know, win via DQ or lose via DQ and then win the title maybe at Money in the Bank or maybe even at SummerSlam. You know, I might have him do it then, where you can try to build him up a little bit more, because what they've done so far, I'm actually a little disappointed in the way that they've done it. But like I said, I understand from a business point.
Yeah, so it turns out that even though Jinder, yes, he did win at a Backlash, he is, you know, Randy Orton said he is going to have him get a rematch at Money in the Bank. So we will see that at Money in the Bank here in a few weeks.
I do want to point out one thing about him and being at Money in the Bank. Where is Money in the Bank at?
St. Louis.
Where is Randy Orton from?
St. Louis.
St. Louis. Tell you who's winning that match.
Yep.
So, yeah, he's definitely losing. You never win at your hometown. Everyone knows that. Just ask Bret Hart.
Although I have seen Randy Orton win in St. Louis. He beats Sheamus.
Okay.
And it was a pay-per-view, too.
But not for a championship.
No, it was the opening match.
Ah. So, another...
Aaron, hold on. Before we move on, Aaron, let me ask you something real quick. From a pure talent standpoint, do you believe that Jinder Mahal is worthy of a main event slot?
I do, if you book him properly. I think anyone is. Yeah, I honestly, even Roman Reigns, you know, even Hulk Hogan, you know, even Sean Stasiak. I don't know why I went for him, but I think that anyone could be worthy of a main event slot if they are booked properly, if they're protected in a specific way, they get enough heel heat or they get enough face cheers. I think that they are worthy of that. And Jinder he's very incredibly average in terms of his promos, in terms of his wrestling ability, but he is very good at getting heel heat, even if it is a very traditional anti-American thing.
Is he good at it, or do they just write an anti-American promo?
They just write anti-American promo.
I mean, who couldn't have cut that promo and got boos? Like, this is my thing. Nothing about him, and I've said this before, right? It's like an Eric Young thing. What about him stands out that makes him different, other than the fact that he has a good tan? He doesn't really have anything that is a... if you were rating him in 2K, nothing about him is above a C-minus level. Other than his steroid-induced look, which I think we can all agree is probably not natural. Like, I'm just curious as to, like, why couldn't he have been the U.S. champion? Why couldn't he be the Intercontinental champion? Why couldn't he be the television champion? Or, like, because
he can still be the champion. And I agree with you. If I were booking this, I would have booked him to win a lot more matches, and I would have had him win the Intercontinental title and then book it as the Intercontinental champion. Jinder Mahal is going to be in India. I 100% agree with you there. With what WWE decided to do, though, I'm big on lineage. I'm big on, hey, this title is the most prestigious thing in all of wrestling, bigger than NWA, bigger than what WCW was or any other promotion. This is supposed to be the biggest one. And the 50th person to hold the title is Jinder Mahal.
That's, I'm going to lose words on that.
That's ridiculous.
Mr. Perfect never held this championship. Roddy Piper. Right. Never held this championship. Jake Roberts. Like, I can go on a list of Hall of Fame. Rick Rude never held this championship. But Jinder Mahal has now held this championship.
Yep. Well, I guess if he's Slater, you know, he could actually win it now. I mean, you never know. But anyway.
Drew McIntyre's next.
True, yeah. So the other thing, you know, one thing that was really positive about the pay-per-view, by the way, on Backlash, is that the tag titles were defended. And honestly, it's not match of the night, but it's close. It was Breezango versus the Usos in a really great comedy match. Doug, what did you think about it?
It was, it's exactly what you said. It's a comedy match. They have their place. This was a good place for it. I am more of the sense of a traditional wrestler. I prefer the more technical wrestling matches. I did enjoy this match, but I wouldn't go as far as saying match of the night. It had its moments. It had its spots. The fact that Tyler Breeze flashed as a granny, flashed one of the Usos, and that part was funny. I laughed. But again, I don't watch wrestling necessarily to laugh. I watch it to see athletically gifted people that are, you know, do crazy stunt things and try to tell a story that way. I have a little bit of an issue with the fact that any other time somebody brings a weapon into the ring, aka a mop, the referee is going to grab it and pull it away. This wasn't an Extreme Rules match. This wasn't anything like that. So why was he allowing the mop in the ring this time?
He's giving them some leeway. You know, he was right. Allowing them to fight. That's what he was doing.
No, because if he would have hit him with the mop, it would have been a disqualification.
But he was cleaning the ring. He was providing a public service. So really, he was wearing wrestler safety, right? Want to make sure there's no extra sweat, no potential blood. Like, really, whoever that was, because it wasn't Tyler Breeze, whoever that was really just doing the referee a favor.
So it would have been a disqualification if he touched Uso, because that was a outside interference then.
Yes. Because Tyler Breeze hadn't made his way to the apron yet.
Yeah.
Okay, just because I'm not... Now, has he been doing the janitor gimmick before with the mop?
Just the last week.
Because, okay, something happened on TakeOver that right before the show started, and I'm wondering if it had something to do with that. Because
no, I don't think it did.
Okay.
But I agree with you, and we'll get to that when we get to TakeOver, because there were some awesome chants, but...
Yeah, so Roger, what did you think about the match?
So it's funny. I agree with Doug, philosophically speaking. Like, for the most part, I do not care for comedy matches all that much. I want to watch athletically gifted people do athletically impressive things. Like, that is what the appeal of wrestling is. Having said that, I actually think this was my match of the night. This, to me, was as good and unexpectedly good as the main event was unexpectedly bad. Because to me, this was finally unlocking what Tyler Breeze is amazing at, which is a silly Zoolander, hilarious. I mean, I have not laughed at a wrestling spot so hard is when he was in the middle about to get splashed, and he just did the ridiculous barrel roll away from him, and Uso switched sides, and it was back and forth, and it was stupid smart comedy, right? It was so lowbrow, but you couldn't help but laugh. And I was like, this is fantastic, between the flashing and the ridiculous costumes. And it was like the perfect way to use Breezango. And I was just like, I want to see a Fashion Files to their next Money in the Bank, where they investigate how they lost the championship and who was that instead of Tyler Breeze. And I want to see this match again. Like, this was entertaining. Like, I had no problem with this. Even Usos winning, I thought they won in the right way. They used a double team. They took advantage of the silliness by Breezango. Like, this was a NXT tag team quality level match. This is something I could see them doing with the river. Not like, I'm not saying like the, you know, NXT Survivor Series, but like, this is something that you could have replaced the Usos with the Revival, and the silliness, the Revival would have played into it perfectly, and you would have been like, that was a good match. Was it 5 stars? No. But this is a match that didn't offend me in the way the main event offended me, or Rowan and Harper offended me, or the welcoming committee offended me. Like, I could watch this on SmackDown every week and be totally fine. This reminded me of New Day and Santino when he was good. Like, this is the kind of comedy that you need to have, and it makes it lighthearted, and it was also still good wrestling, which I think is a perfect combination.
Yeah, I agree with Roger almost wholeheartedly, especially about the philosophical thing and the comedy aspect of it. The one thing I am kind of curious about, though, is what they're going to do going forward. Because obviously, you know, a lot of times that you do have the rematch, you know, you could have it, of course, on the SmackDowns. You may have it at Money in the Bank as well. But there's also the New Day, who's being inserted into the mix. So I'm guessing that it'll be the New Day versus the Usos is probably the next route that they're going to go. I almost wonder, though, if they're going to do maybe a triple threat or even a fatal four-way if you throw American Alpha or potentially another team in there. But one thing I do want to mention, though, is that the Fashion Files skits, the majority of them have been absolutely hilarious. You know, there's a stinker here or there, but some of the stuff in there is just really dumb, smart comedy. When they were over in the UK and he goes, "Cheerio." "No, I've had breakfast." Like, just really got me. I don't know why. Just really got me because it's so stupid. But either way, tag title match was one of the best matches I thought of the night. And I'm not a big comedy guy. You know, I hate Santino. I absolutely hated his comedy. But this, for whatever reason, worked for me.
All right, yeah, I really enjoyed the match, and like, and I had my family, they were all laughing about it. Just him rolling back and forth just kills me. I actually, if I saw that right now, I would probably, well, we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, so it was a great match. I hope they continue this, bring the New Day in, do a little three-way dance. That'd be pretty cool, too. So let's move on to the U.S. title picture. AJ Styles wins the number one contender, and then he faces Kevin Owens. Aaron, what are your thoughts on the match?
It was a really good match. You know, these two put on a really good story, and I thought that they did a really great job, especially towards the end when, you know, AJ does the suplex to Kevin Owens on the apron, but then they go towards the tables, and, you know, AJ is unable to get the Styles Clash on the table, and then, you know, Kevin Owens is dastardly, puts his foot into the open hole, and then AJ just can't get out. Really good storytelling. The only thing, and actually this might be a good thing, is that those two are going to be in the Money in the Bank match in a couple of weeks, in 4 weeks' time. And so those two could potentially continue their feud, so to speak, by fighting each other in the Money in the Bank match before having another match at the following pay-per-view, which I believe is SummerSlam for them. I could be incorrect, but I believe after that is SummerSlam. And so
they'll
they could
have
July
1 first. And then,
oh, that's right. They'll have a July pay-per-view. So whatever the July pay-per-view is, that's when they will probably have their match. And so it'll feel like a long time, which is something that they've done a very good job with AJ on. His feud with Cena, he had his match at SummerSlam, and they had their final match then at Royal Rumble. So, I mean, right there is a 7 month span or 6 month span for those two to have their match. I mean, that's a pretty good storytelling length that you're going there, and I think it was really smart on WWE's part. If they do it again with AJ and with Kevin Owens now, they could potentially stretch this out till, who knows, maybe their September pay-per-view if they were really smart. So great match, probably my match of the night, and hopefully they are continuing down the right path as it pertains to Kevin Owens and AJ Styles.
Yeah, I'll agree, it was match of the night. I mean, there was a lot, it was a lot of smart spots too. The one thing that I keep seeing a lot is that there's sometimes people do a spot fest, and it doesn't really tell the story. And I felt that these two guys worked really well together, and I almost hope that they continue this even after the Money in the Bank match. But anyways, Doug, what'd you think about it?
I agree. This is my match of the night, and it is definitely a setup match. This was fine storyline wise. They didn't give you everything that they have. I would expect a lot more from a KO AJ fight, but I think that's the point of this match right here. It was Backlash. It's a maybe now even downgraded to a D level pay per view thanks to the main event, but this wasn't something like you weren't expecting going into Backlash seeing a WrestleMania style match or a SummerSlam style match or a Big Four type match. You expected to see hopefully something good and be, you know, lower your expectations, but be surprised. Kind of like how it was last month or with Payback. I was pleasantly surprised with Payback. This one, I went in with a little bit low expectations, but a little bit higher expectations than Payback because they had, I mean, you like I said, you would expect a big match out of KO and AJ. This was the teaser. This is the teaser trailer for something to come later. They didn't give everything, so there's a lot more we can see out of them. It was a great finish in the aspect of it didn't hurt either of them. It doesn't hurt AJ. It doesn't hurt KO. And it leaves the fan wanting more. I disagree with WWE putting this in Chicago because I think Chicago crowd deserves a better graded pay-per-view and better graded matches. But, you know, I guess if you're going to put a bad show on, put it in Chicago so that you know you're going to have fans to cheer and shout things out. So that was, you know, again, match of the night, but match of the night being when everything else is a failure, a D is the best, I guess. I don't know.
I think the phrase you're looking for is a D minus is better than an F.
Right.
I mean, I concur wholeheartedly, actually, with what Doug just said. It's actually the reason I don't have this match tonight is that I know that they're capable of much more. And not that this is anything close to a bad match. I don't want to sound like I am trying to pile on this match. But I know what AJ and KO are capable of, and this felt like the teaser, right? Like, this is Batman Begins, not The Dark Knight. This wasn't the thing that you've been waiting for to see. I think that's what we get at SummerSlam. So to me personally, and I think actually I would, and we'll talk about this later, I would love to see United States Championship versus, you know, something else. So, I mean, you know, good match. I thought it was a very smart win. They showed us a preview of things to come without giving everything away. Quality match, very smart finish. You know, I have no problem with this. I don't think either person came out looking bad for this. It should have been the main event. Other than that, it probably should have been for the WWE title, but enough on that. I mean, quality match. Not mad about that.
All right. So on SmackDown, they announced who's going to be in the Money in the Bank match. We have Sami Zayn, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Dolph Ziggler, Kevin Owens, and Baron Corbin. So, Doug, who do you think is going to win this match?
Let's rephrase this. Doug, since you correctly did it last time, who is going to win this match?
I think I kind of called this, I stated at WrestleMania when they knocked Baron Corbin and Dean Ambrose down to the pre-show match, and then they had Baron lose. Now they have Backlash, and Baron loses to Sami Zayn clean. And it was actually a decent match. So I said it back in WrestleMania. I'm going to stick with it now. Baron Corbin is my pick to win Money in the Bank due to the fact that I think he would do a good – he's been doing good promos on Talking Smack. I think he can do a slow kind of – I don't want to say Edge just because he's nowhere even close to the level that Edge was. But you could do a lot of those fake psych outs, kind of like what you did with Seth Rollins. Hey, I'm going to come out. I'm going to beat you. Oh, no. You know what? I'll wait till next time. You can do that, and it would be good for Baron to kind of have that kind of a push, you know, for a former Andre the Giant Memorial Battle winner you can do something good for Baron here. And I think he's been eating these losses, which will just set up for a big win at Money in the Bank.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like the Andre the Moro Battle Royal winner is supposed to be doing something. Who won it this year? Is he on the card? Oh, no, that's
Gronk.
Right.
Gronk's not even Gronk. In the – yeah.
Yeah, Gronk's not even in the match. Oddly enough, I agree with Doug. This happens often, but every year I think it's going to be Sami Zayn, and every year I'm wrong. And so I'm just done picking Sami Zayn. Like, it's just he's never going to get the push I want him to get. I've just accepted it as a reality, and Sami's always going to be the guy who weird like feels like he's just a little bit away, and he never reaches it. I think AJ and KO have unfinished business for SummerSlam, so I don't think they get it. I think Nakamura is too soon. I think Dolph Ziggler is still Dolph Ziggler. So pretty much by default, I think Baron Corbin gets it, and it makes the most sense. All the points Doug made, they're correct. And the only thing I would be concerned about is that if Corbin wins this, every fake-out cash is going to get him massive cheers, because I think that crowd is going to be so disgusted with Mahal as bad as he's about to perform that I would be legitimately cheering if Corbin beats him into the dust. Like, if, you know, the Singh brothers cost him a Money in the Bank opportunity or something like that. I mean, if he puts them through tables, the crowd's going to go wild. And I'm not sure that you want to build him, you know, you need to get him heel heat to a point where you make him a monster heel. You don't really want him to be that tweener yet. I think Corbin, with an outside chance of maybe Kevin Owens getting a super, super push where he's like the United States champion and the Money in the Bank winner. So like he talks about how not only am I the face of America, but I'm going to be the first man or second guy since Seth Rollins to hold both championships. So I think Corbin right now, 60-65% chance to win.
I actually am a different. I'm going a different route, and partly with what you said there, Roger, is what I agree with, which is Kevin Owens. I think that Kevin Owens is going to win the Money in the Bank briefcase, and the reason why is because holding the U.S. title is going to be nice. He will lose that at some point in time. I think it's going to be very similar to what happened with The Miz, because Miz was holding the U.S. title and the briefcase way back when, until he lost it to Daniel Bryan and then cashed in on Randy Orton. And you can do that, and it doesn't hurt him that much. And Kevin Owens has already proven to be in the main event scene where we're okay with him in there. The thing I have with Baron Corbin is I think that his promos, he doesn't have enough charisma, and he doesn't have enough behind him where you think, okay, I believe in that guy right now. Like even on SmackDown this past week when he was talking to Kevin Owens, I didn't believe that he was like, Kevin, can you please shut up? And it's like, wait, what? Like, are you upset with him? I can't tell, you know, sort of thing. And so what I'm thinking is that WWE thinks that Baron Corbin is going to be the next monster heel. But if you have Kevin Owens win, and let's just say, we have Jinder Mahal drop the title to AJ Styles or you know, Randy Orton. And then Kevin Owens cashes in on him immediately, very similar to what they've done in the past. If you do something like that, Kevin Owens is then going to get massive heel heat. And then you can then set up, of course, a lot of other things where Kevin Owens as a heel isn't the type of heel where he will team with you because he's a heel. He's a very lone wolf, you know, no pun intended, lone wolf when it comes to him being a heel. It's just him against the world. So I actually think KO is probably, I'd give him like about a 50% chance right now.
There is one more factor that we have to consider is that Jericho could come back and cost him.
That too, yeah.
So I could very much see a scenario kind of like WrestleMania 24 where MVP was about to win and then Matt Hardy came out. So I could definitely see Jericho running out through the crowd, nail a code breaker, and then disappear again for 2 months, but then Owens just whining about how Jericho cost him, blah, 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 blah. So that's the only reason I didn't really think Owens is going to win, but I definitely agree in the sense that he would fit perfectly for the Money in the Bank because, I mean, he could come out and apron bomb you pretty much at any time.
But the other thing is that, you know, as we've seen in the past, is that they will basically beat you down till you're like almost considered a jobber, and then you'll win the Money in the Bank briefcase, and then you'll cash in. And that's why I have to go with Baron Corbin as well. I mean, Kevin Owens, it would be great if they did that, what Aaron just said. But just seeing the formula WWE goes after every time, I just believe it's going to be Baron Corbin that wins. And I don't think it's actually the writers. I think it's higher ups that are saying, this is what we're going to do. Because Baron Corbin should not have lost clean at all to Sami Zayn. There should have been something. Some tomfoolery should have happened, but it didn't. So,
And one more thing, and Ambrose was able to avoid this last year because he cashed in immediately. I can't remember the last time, I guess maybe Seth Rollins would be the exception to this rule, that the Money in the Bank winner didn't just start eating pinfalls left and right. Like, the moment you get the briefcase, for some reason, you lose the ability to win any match. Sheamus, I remember, was like a jobber, and he was getting beat every single pay-per-view. And we were like, if he's going to win the title, why is he eating pinfalls everywhere? The same thing, I think, happened before, whoever it was before Seth, maybe Del Rio or Zig. I mean, it was just like The Miz. I remember he was jobbing a lot, even though he had the U.S. title. So it was just like, I don't necessarily know if I want Owens to win the Money in the Briefcase because I don't want him to turn into a jobber. Whereas like Corbin, I feel like he's so big that they wouldn't do that to him, right? He's still young and he's the future monster heel. They're not going to just start turning him into a jobber, so he will still be protected.
I was going to say the other thing that that a lot of these Money in the Bank winners have in common is that they usually are a mid-card person that is then promoted into the main event status. Nakamura, although new, is main event status. AJ Styles, main event status. Kevin Owens, main event status already. So your real three people that are left are Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Baron Corbin. Now, I don't see you give it to Dolph because, well, you've seen what they've treated Dolph like for the last, his whole career. Sami, it doesn't hurt him. It doesn't help him if he wins. And again, I like the idea. I want to see a Kevin Owens with the Money in the Bank because he could do a lot of good things with it. He would be an excellent promo, but he doesn't need the Money in the Bank in order to be that person. He's got one title, so I really just don't see him being that. Baron Corbin is that perfect underdog. Oh, they'll never see this coming, although three out of the four of us see this coming. And this is just it's going to be one of those. This is Vince's guy.
That's right. He's tall, and he's big.
He's a big sweaty man.
His downside will be his inability to speak, though. Like he needs a manager at this point because his cadence
needs Paul Heyman.
He needs Paul Heyman. Yeah, his cadence is poor. Like Aaron said, his voice sounds like a child.
Right.
And not in like the Mike Tyson scary, like this guy must be mentally unstable. He'll probably kill me in the ring type of way. Like he doesn't sound threatening. He sounds like a guy who could just be a normal dude that you talk to in a bar. And I don't necessarily know if that's what you want out of a big 6'8", like former football player. So
he sounds like he's trying to act very.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It sounds like John Morrison. It sounds very forced. Truthfully, I don't like Eva Marie, but she would have been perfect to be paired up with him. Because she draws heat, she can talk, she can't do anything else, but those two things she does well. She's not Dana Brooke is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Who can't do either.
I feel like this is going to be a swerve, though. I think that the signs do point towards Baron Corbin, but I think very similar to a couple years ago when Sheamus won the title, I don't think anyone was expecting Sheamus to win. You know, he went up against it was Roman Reigns and Randy Orton in that match. And I believe that those were the two that everyone was kind of expecting to win back in 2015.
Was Orton in that match?
Yeah, it was Sheamus, Ziggler, Kane, Neville, Kofi Kingston, Roman Reigns and Randy Orton. Neville obviously was the one that no one expected to. Probably then Dolph and Kofi were the next. And so it was really Roman Reigns and Randy Orton, Sheamus being the third probably. But it was those two. We were all expecting. I'm thinking maybe they're going to swerve us a little bit. And that's why my guess right now is KO. I do reserve the right to change it right before the pay-per-view.
I already put it in the pick'ems.
All right. So let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger or podcaster? Or are you just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free set builder, hands on the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code off the mark, you're going to save 25% off your web hosting packages. So what do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs. Also, make sure you check out Section 86's Off the Mark page and click on the banner at the top to save big on items from WWEShop.com. So our monthly topic is NXT Chicago. Of course, myself and Doug went to the show up in Chicago. We sat, it was section 5, row 2. So we were one away from the front row. And these were great seats, great, great seats. So, Doug, what did you think about the show overall?
I didn't actually have high expectations when I went into this show. It just didn't, the card to me didn't seem the greatest. And I think that was a lot to do with the fact that I thought the main event was going to be Bobby Roode versus Hideo Itami. As we now know, it's not, it wasn't the last match. The tag titles were, so I was a little surprised by that, but I kind of thought that that would be a good send off maybe for DIY to come up to the main roster or something like that. So it made sense when the whole show was done and over with. But I try to base everything off of what the main event is. What do you leave? What is your last impression of the show? And the actual main event, the tag title match, was a great match. And Bobby Roode versus Hideo Itami was a lot better than I thought. You do have a potential match of the year at this event with Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. It outshined everything that I expected. Each match was better than I thought it would be. And it had just an overall good feel about it. Roderick Strong beating Eric Young and taking out Sanity, I thought it was a little bit because how long did it take the Perfect 10 to do it? And now all of a sudden he does it in his first try. So I thought a little behind that. But at the same time, decent match, good opening show. The women's match was good too. I thought that one kind of ended abruptly. I don't know if there was something behind that, if that was a time-saving thing, or if there was a possible injury. That was one of the things I was kind of concerned about. But it seems like everybody came out of that one okay. But it just seemed like it just like, oh, it's going to go on for at least a little bit longer, and then all of a sudden it's over. It's like, oh, that's
kind of surprising. It seemed like they didn't gel very well, the three of them. It's almost like you needed another person in there. And yeah, I agree with that too. And one thing also to point out, Ruby Riott, her mother pointed out that she was her mother the entire time, because when she was there, that's my girl. She even got up on the guardrail yelling that. So
yeah, she was, it was hilarious.
Very loud throughout the entire match. I haven't watched that match to see if it what picked up, but you know, one thing to point out also, even the people in front of us said something. They with the Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate match, they said it was like that was one of the best matches they've seen, and that's coming from a Mark opposed to a Smark watching it, and we're like, that might be match of the year. You know, there's only one other match that I think has, you know, a contendership with it. So we saw it live, and Roger, what'd you think about when you saw it on TV?
Yeah, I mean, wow. I had medium expectations for the entire card, and this wasn't TakeOver Dallas, but this was really, really good. This reminded me of that kind of run, I want to say in 2015, where every TakeOver was just money. Where Sasha and Bayley were tearing it up, or Owens and Finn were tearing it up, and, you know, Sammy. I mean, it was just, you know, well, you just knew that every TakeOver is going to be special. This was, I think, the night that Bobby Roode finally arrived in NXT. I think he's figured out the formula he wants to work. I think this is Hideo Itami's best match in NXT. I think this is Roode's second best title defense. I think his Ono one was a little bit better on the random NXT. Obviously, a DIY goes without saying. They're absolutely fantastic in pretty much every match they do. But, man, that UK title match, I mean, when it is done, I was like, I think that was the match of the year. Like, I hadn't seen Cena Styles recently. I probably should watch it again before I make a fair comparison. But, I mean, that match just was so... And the thing I loved about it, and this reminds me of Aaron's classic rant from last year, this wasn't finisher spam. This was good quality wrestling with moves that I didn't expect. Like, when Bate jumped and hit that shooting star press, I was like, I didn't even know this dude could do that because he's so strong and doesn't look like Neville where you just expect him to do that. I mean, that match was as good as, I don't care what Meltzer says, it was as good as Okada Omega, and it was just as good as Styles Cena. Like, when we do our year-end reviews, like, this is going to be in the discussion. And I had no problem with it. It's a good show. I mean, only thing I think that I would bother me about this show is that I just have trust issues now. Like, I just legitimately don't feel comfortable around people I consider best friends, because between Owens and Jericho and then what Tommaso did, I'm just like, I was looking at Aaron with side eye the whole backlash. I was like, nah, man, I'm not having you like throw me through a barbershop window. Like, I just don't trust it anymore.
I had a briefcase next to me. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, I know. You probably had a steel chair. Like, honestly, I should have worn a vest, because you were probably going to dismember I was probably about to get kicked out. Like, you see what I'm saying? No trust issues.
Aaron was going to cash in on Roger that night.
Oh, man.
I mean, the UK match, I mean, I 100% agree with everything that you guys said. I was expecting the outcome of this because I figured they were going to do a chase for the title when they do actually launch the UK, you know, programming that they're going to do. So that was kind of expected when Pete Dunne had won. But yeah, I mean, it was an amazing match. The next big match that happened was the NXT title match with Bobby Roode, who actually retained over Hideo Itami. Very good match as well. Andy, what was it like in the crowd for that match? Were they very anti-Roode? Was it very pro Hideo, or what was the atmosphere like?
They were very pro Bobby Roode. That was the one thing that was pointed out, and nothing against Hideo Itami's, you know, wife and kids sitting in the front row. They didn't care. It was about Bobby Roode, and even before he even got up onto his the pedestal that spins around, people were already cheering for him. And then finally, when he gets up, when you see him walk from gorilla position to get on, that everyone's already cheering. And then, you know, the entrance itself was really, really, really good. Especially seeing it live. It was really good. Something to, I think everyone should check out.
I think what you meant to say is that it was really, really glorious.
I'm sorry. Yes. It was glorious. And, I just sat there. I was just in awe. I'm like, wow, this is so awesome. And if I'm correct, Doug, did Tommy, didn't he get booed when he came out?
Not necessarily. There was, it was more of the, it was a very mixed reaction. There wasn't necessarily boos, but there wasn't really cheers either when he came out. During the match, you'll hear, several spots where people were cheering for Itami or something like that. And you have that little bit, but I mean, it was just overwhelmingly Roode. I know I love this match, for multiple reasons of just, you know, it is a glorious match when Bobby Roode came out there and he did his, and they both did a great job working on one part of the body so that they couldn't do their finisher move. And then when he did hit the go to sleep, you know, Roode rolls out of the ring. So it makes sense that why couldn't you get the pin after you do your finisher? He had to go out there, pick him up, and pull him in. I think there was two highlights to this match for me personally, and that's right when I tried several times to do to get some chance going. And right when they were against the ropes, I think right when Bobby Roode does the whole, you know, he backs off from him, I tried to get a USA chant going, and people started laughing around me and they're like, "Hey, he's Canadian." And it's like, "Yeah, I know." And then the guy goes, "Oh, you know what? We should start a USA chant." And you know, so there was a little bit of that. Another highlight
for me
was
take over Dallas.
Right. Needed them. But the other thing that, and you mentioned Dallas at the fan zone, there was a lot of this going on, is every time there was a submission, the crowd started yelling, "Ask him." So every time there was a simple submission, I don't know if you guys, maybe it was a lot of times when I was there and you guys weren't, but the crowd would yell, "Ask him," in simple continuation. Like, even some of the wrestlers got in on it. And so it would be the crowd yelling, "Ask him." Then the wrestler would say, "Hey, ref, ask him." And then the crowd would say, "Ask him." Wrestler would say, "Ask him." So when Bobby Roode has him in a simple, I think, arm bar or something like that, I yell out, "Ask him." And if you do turn up your volume a little bit, you will hear one sole guy yell, "Ask him." And it's so funny because you'll see Bobby Roode then look at the referee and go, "Ask him." And I was like a little schoolgirl. I'll admit that. I was so overwhelmed that he said, "Ask him." It's like, "Oh, he heard me. He heard me. I can't believe it." I couldn't even do it again because I was so overjoyed and laughing. So that was a good highlight for me. But because we saw Hideo's wife and kids sitting front row during the match, after the match was over, my immediate reaction was to look over to see what their reaction was. And I was very, very surprised. His kids, not very surprised because they were crying. but his wife was laughing. And I think she was laughing at the kids because she knows, you know, it's not real. Daddy's okay and all this other stuff. But she was legitimately laughing. And I couldn't help but was like, wow, your husband just took a beating and now you're laughing. Please, where's Kevin Dunn with the reaction photo there? Zoom in on her.
Swerve, she's with Bobby Roode.
Right. She had a glorious night also.
Oh, was she victorious? Did she get in?
But it was a great match, and but it doesn't have anything to do with our next match, which was the tag titles.
Yeah, I want to apologize to Doug right now. I'm sorry that I said, hey, that's a gimmick ladder. Hey, that's a gimmick ladder. I kept saying it to him, so I feel bad for saying it, but it was pretty obvious. It's like, here's a black ladder, and this is kind of like a gray area. Of course, that's the... And the other thing is, why were the tag titles so low? They, like, literally, like, they put up, like, a six-footer or an eight-footer ladder. The eight-foot ladder was almost touching... The belts were almost touching it. It didn't make sense.
Well, I can tell you why it was so low, because the spots that they want, like, the closing spot with the super collider wouldn't have worked if the belts were another 3 feet up, because then Gargano and Ciampa would have been hanging too high. So they would have had to do something crazy where they knock them off and catch them, and then that way, right, where they were hanging, they could literally just grab them and then boom, and then the collider and then boom. So... I mean, I did notice that it was lower. I did notice that they were using, like, the WLC ladders as well. But I don't think it took away anything from the match. It's just one of those things where I was like, I could climb up those ladders and be fine. And, it was definitely gimmick ladders.
I think it took a little bit away just in the fact that because the Authors of Pain are so tall themselves, it really looked like they could just have to jump up and they could have grabbed the – yeah.
Yeah,
that's the only thing. Logically watching it, you watch one of them take one step up and they could have grabbed the whole thing. And it's like, well, this doesn't make sense. Why would they even have to climb up anymore on the ladder? One of them could get on the other one's shoulders. I was waiting for that.
I was too. I was definitely waiting for the Christian and Rhino thing where you just put them on the shoulders, reached up. Thank you. We're done.
Right.
And then there's one guy that just kept yelling, just jump, over and over again.
Was that me?
I think it was you, and there was like another guy behind us as well that was saying that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was a very good match, though, and I think there was very good storytelling there, especially when Gargano took the shot to the face when he pushed Chomp out of the way. The thing I thought that was most interesting, though, is obviously at the end of the match, we had Authors of Pain retain. And what was the like in the crowd, Doug? Because, you know, on TV, we see them, they're embracing. Ciampa is like, look, dude, it's okay, man. You know, like, we'll get it next time sort of thing. And they're walking to the back. And for us at home, the logo comes up. We were safe. It's okay. You know, nothing's going to happen. And obviously, there was a turn. So, like, what was it? What was the atmosphere like there?
The crowd... during it was probably thinking the same thing I was, that this was the swan song for DIY. They're now going to make their move up to the main roster as a tag team, especially since you have New Day injured. You have the Revival injured. There is a need for new tag teams up in the main roster. So I think everybody was cheering. They were all yelling DIY, showing their appreciation for all the hard work that they've done in NXT. But when you had Ciampa turn on Johnny, you got instant heel. Like there was, and I do find it funny because it was probably about the same amount of people. They showed like six people being shocked. I watched the show afterwards, six people being shocked. And then they turned to one other person who was laughing his ass off. But everybody else, I mean, overwhelmingly turned on Ciampa. The FU chant, yeah. I mean, everybody joined in on those chants. There wasn't a single person that was not joining in on those chants. It was overwhelmingly, like Roger said, the trust of a best friend anymore is not there. You just, you know, especially that spot, like you said, where Johnny took the ladder shot for Ciampa. You just think back to all the things that they did and all the tag team things that they did and how they've been together and everything, and just absolutely rip up everything. It was amazing. It was WWE did it right, because Ciampa didn't just throw him into the screen or whatever you want to call it, the pixelated thing. He didn't just knee him. He then took him onto the announcer's table, jumped off the announcer's table to a lower two tables, and put him through those. And I mean, legitimately, you thought that Johnny was done. Very, 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 very sad to see. And I'm kind of curious. I was, because we sat by a lot of wrestlers' families and like production people's families and trainers' families, I looked over and there was this one lady. I kind of want to look it up. I'm not 100% certain, but I'm thinking it was Gargano's wife.
Yes.
Was it Candice?
Yes.
Candice LeRae?
She had the white hair, by the way, Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
her. Yeah, that one. Yeah, because they filmed her also to get a crowd reaction, and this was well after the whole show was over. They pointed, I think, the camera at me, and I kind of just looked at them like they were an idiot, because I was kind of along with the guys with two that was laughing, so I had a smile on my face a little bit, because this made me happy as a storyline purpose. Like, this surprised me. Never saw it coming, and I love that kind of surprise. Something I never expected. So in the aspect of, wow, they surprised me, this is great. They normally don't. I usually can see some kind of angles. I might not be able to predict all the matches because they have some tomfoolery or whatever. But overall, you can see why they did it and everything like this. I do not understand why they broke them up, but I'm very interested to see what happens in the future.
The other thing to point out, and this is something that I noticed because I was like, is this the end of the show? Is this the end of the show? I look up and at the scoreboard in the center, they actually had the NXT logo on the screen, and then it went to just the plain, like the regular NXT logo. So I'm like, oh, so it's off. They actually swerved us there because I saw some people leaving, and then all of a sudden, that's when it happens. So that the good swerve by WWE on their part. And also, we should have realized, why were there two red tables sitting there doing nothing?
I never saw them there.
Oh, when we came in, I noticed it. I was like, that's weird. And I thought that there were steps going up to the stage, but then I was like, what? Didn't think anything of it until after the fact. You're like, ugh, gosh darn it. But
to Doug's point, actually, I never saw this coming, because when they lost at Brooklyn and Johnny tapped out, I kind of thought Ciampa might turn on him there, because it was kind of Johnny's fault. He had taken the submission, and like, I could have seen Ciampa in frustration, like clotheslining him in and like snapping and being like, we can't win the title. We can't get over the hump. This, I just legitimately did not see coming. Like, you knew the Shield had to end. So sooner or later, it was either Ambrose or Rollins who was going to turn. You knew that sooner or later, Owens and Jericho were going to go into the program, because we knew Jericho was leaving. So like, even though I hated the fact that we were done with Y2JKO, like, okay. I thought DIY had getting their swan song. I thought they were going to show up on SmackDown or Raw the next night. Like, like Aaron said, we were safe. The logo came up. The team was good. Like, I literally, you know, we were texting and I was turning away. And then all of a sudden I just see Ciampa grab me by the back of the head. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know that. Doug said it best. I didn't see it coming. I don't even sure I'm really happy about it, but I'm really interested to see what they do going forward. One note is that as good as they are separately, I don't think on the main roster they will succeed, because just the way they book smaller guys, which means they're going to get pigeonholed into the cruiserweight division, or worse, they're going to be lower card on the main show, which means they're going to have to somehow find a way to reunite. Their only chance for success in the main roster is as DIY. They just won't get the push without it. And it sucks because they're both very talented. But
yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that, and I actually think it might have been better if they would have came up as a team. This will help them out in NXT, and if the plan is to keep them in NXT for, you know, the next year or so, then I think it's probably the smart move. But I do think that them coming to the main roster, if they do, it would be better as a tag team. The one question I have for you, Andy, let me just start with you and then we'll move to Doug. You know, you've seen a number of live events this year and the previous year. So, Andy, for you, obviously, I'm assuming NXT Dallas was probably your number one event that you've seen. Where would this one rank? Would this be your number two? Would this be your third one?
I think it would have to be number two because, you know, NXT TakeOver Dallas, that one is the best show I've ever been to. I have this thing. We went to a Thunder in Peoria a long time ago. And that show was really good too, but and of course we went to the WCW. I think it was Spring Stampede, that pay per view, but that one sucked. So I don't even know why that's on the list. But anyways, I will say that of the shows I've seen, especially recently, that's number two. It can't be number one because I mean realistically, TakeOver Dallas, the one problem match that they had was Aries versus Corbin. You know, whatever. But other than that, the other matches were great, and you were just stuck to your seats the entire time. Yeah, this one was this surprised me more because I thought it was going to suck. And I want not suck, but I thought there would be like one or two good matches, and I thought that was it. But surprisingly, it was one of the better, probably the second best show I've ever seen. So I'm really
and
happy.
Doug, for you, I know that you've been to a number of key matches too, key pay-per-views. Where would this rank for you?
As an overall show, this is very, very high. I will not say. I mean, NXT Dallas was wonderful. WrestleMania was definitely an experience. It's the best way I could kind of say that one. But I always have to dig back to Money in the Bank in Chicago with CM Punk and Cena as my ultimate moment, I guess, live. And that show was overall was still even great. As an overall show, they had two Money in the Bank matches, which I know some people didn't like, but I like the fact that there were two there. Because that's really why I go to Money in the Bank, is to watch the Money in the Bank match. And then you throw on a main event like that. That was just a phenomenal show. But overall, this is definitely a top five live event that I've been to. Again, like Raw 1000 was an experience. It wasn't necessarily a great show, but it was definitely a memorable experience. This was a great show and experience, so definitely top five.
Yeah, but overall, I'm just glad that we were able to go. And actually, I got to thank Aaron for this, actually, because of it. Because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have gone to the show. So,
right.
Thank you, AP, for doing that for us. We did get a couple great chants. CM Punk, by the way, someone started that chant before the show started, which I thought was hilarious. But it only happened once Hideo Itami actually hit the GTS. Then you heard the CM Punk chants for a little bit, but then it was done. I thought it would continue. It was just kind of there.
Did you hear boos? Because I could have swore, yes, I heard the CM Punk chants, and then I heard boos, which drowned it out.
Yes. Instantly. Anytime somebody tried to start a CM Punk chant, there were a lot of boos, which is why you might even hear a lot of boos when Itami came out, because people were starting to try to do a CM Punk chant, and instantly, like, the rest of the crowd turned on him, which I am very happy to see nowadays. And I think even CM Punk, he said at the last two C2E2s, somebody's mentioned, hey, it was something about wrestling. He's like, I'm done with wrestling. I don't appreciate the wrestlers that are there. I'm not there. I don't need my name chanted anymore. I know I have fans. Let them talk to me. Don't need to be breeding them up during wrestling things. So I'm very happy that people, especially in Chicago, are even booing the CM Punk chants. A lot of the chants and it was a rowdy crowd. It was that rowdy Chicago crowd. You can definitely hear them. And there were still some fun chants, but everybody was into every match. And that's one of the things that made this whole pay-per-view great. What a lot of people did not see was one of the best chants of the night.
Yes.
Andy, do you want to explain the best chant of the night?
Well, if you've never been to a WWE live event, they always have a guy who comes out and he'll sweep in the ring. And the crowd was already pumped because they just saw Drew Galloway.
You mean Tyler Breeze?
Huh?
No. No, it wasn't Tyler Breeze.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was Drew Galloway. Yeah. So he wrestled, and he wrestled Curt Hawkins. And the crowd, you know, and the crowd was still, you know, pretty pumped and stuff. And this guy was sweeping, and he was the only one in there. So someone started yelling, sweep, 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 sweep. And, like, he just kept sweeping and stuff, and he was laughing in the ring. And I wish they had that on camera the entire time, because the sweep was one of the funniest things, one of the funniest chants that will never be on TV. But, Doug, what was it? Let's go sweep, let's go, or sweep, sweep, sweep.
There was sweep while he was actually sweeping, and then once he left, people started chanting one more sweep, instead of one more time. And he actually then did. He ran back in real quick, did a little sweep. Everybody lost their mind. And there was a let's go sweeper chant going on. A lot of people were just, I mean, absolutely going nuts. And I mean, the guy was blushing. He was kind of a palish whitish, but he was absolutely red. If you looked at him while he was sweeping, but while he was outside, he's like, you made that guy's night and life. That's probably one night he will never forget.
He was more over than Roman Reigns has ever been.
Right.
And then the UK chants are really good. I like that. And then the best one was, I can't remember the guys, what they're calling him, Velvet something.
Ego. Oh, or no, the new, and you guys will see this on Wednesday when NXT shows. But everybody should listen for one of the greatest chants that I heard. And it wasn't the loudest, but it was still funny because they had a Chicago jobber there for this guy. And because people didn't even remember who this guy was, they started the chant, let's go jobber.
Yep. I hope that makes TV, because that was just awesome. So right. WWE will not have it on there, of course, but oh well. It happens. So overall, I will say it was a great experience, great show. And I know you guys watched it on the network, so it sounds like you guys liked it as well. So do you have any last thoughts on that, Aaron? Or Roger?
Jinder freaking Mahal.
We were ending on such a good note with NXT. Why did you have to bring that back?
Because I'm a very bitter man. I feel hindered. That's how I feel.
You feel hindered.
Wait, did you just assume my gender?
All right, so that's all the time we have for this month's show. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at OffTheMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and editing the podcast, and I want to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And for Roger Cave, Doug Hahn, and Aaron Hughes, I'm Andrew Hughes, and until next time, we'll see you in the ring.